Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Market Mentors podcast. I'm Matt Dodgson, co-founder of Market Recruitment, and we connect B2B tech and SaaS businesses with marketers to help them grow. This week, we're joined by Sam Keenler. And if you're active on LinkedIn, then I'm sure Sam doesn't need any introduction. But we're not here to have the usual demand gen debate. Instead, Sam's just landed a new role at Loxo as their first full-time marketer. So we're going to dig into how he's thinking about scaling his team and why. And because Loxo is a recruiting and talent intelligence platform, we're also going to chat about the parallels of recruitment and B2B marketing, why the old way of recruiting is dead, and some ideas to help transform your hiring. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to the Market Mentors podcast, Sam.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. It's going to be a fun conversation for us.
Absolute pleasure to have you here. So before we get stuck into this one, I'd love to know what your relationship is with B2B tech marketing.
Love, hate? Is that an answer? Kidding. Totally kidding.
It's an honest one.
No, I love it. I've been in B2B marketing for over 10 years now. Kind of crazy to think about. Touched most every role at some point along the way. So I've started as a BDR. We called it an ADR, then account development representative. Went into marketing operations for a little bit, moved over to digital marketing, then went heavy into demand gen for a while, and now oversee all marketing. So mix of marketing, mix of company types. I've been at the big enterprise, 1 billion ARR company, was at agency with Refine Labs, working with over 50 startups, and now back in-house at Loxos. It's been fun to really see all the different facets of marketing and how it operates at different sizes of organizations as well.
Yeah, I guess a lot of our audience will recognize your name from your Refine Labs days. Certainly, that's where I came across you and Chris. You did a fantastic job and you were pretty prominent on LinkedIn. So every time I was flashing my LinkedIn up, you guys were in the feeds. Yeah, you did a good job there.
Yeah, we know where marketers like to spend their time when it's on LinkedIn.
Indeed. So the recruitment space is something new to you, Sam, but I've often said there's a lot of parallels and similarities between recruitment and B2B marketing. What are your thoughts on this now you've landed it at Loxo?
Yeah, this has been fascinating to me. And it's also what's made me really hopeful that we can help and empower recruiters the same way that we have marketers for the last handful of years. So the psychological aspect to me is nearly identical. So let's look at like B2B marketing. You have 98 to 99% of your market. They're not actively looking to purchase software or services. I mean, no one really wants to add their tech stack to implement, to buy stuff. And then when you look at a job market, I mean, right now it's a little bit different, but when you think of top talent, usually 98 to 99% of them aren't actively looking for a new role. So what do you do about it? In marketing and recruiting, it's the same exact thing. So your job's going to be, one, you need to build awareness of what your brand is, what you do. Two, you need to then develop trust by demonstrating your expertise or showing how you can help advance their career. Third, you're going to want to create a relationship with them as a potential trusted partner. That's huge. And then lastly, like when they're ready to buy or when they want to start that conversation about moving roles, they're going to come straight to you. So the end result and the behaviors that fuel that are near identical. And that's what's wild, but exciting and eerily similar all at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's a pretty traditional sector. You look at a lot of companies and how they go to market with something like an advert. You know, lots of companies copy and paste a job description, chuck it out there, and they think that's going to engage somebody and going to prompt them to actually make a job application. It is that traditional. So I think some recruitment companies and some companies that do recruit have sort of figured this sort of stuff out. But like you said, there's lots of opportunities out there.
Yeah. So think about this. We'll go into like the tactics for a second. So I'll call it the old way of marketing, and then I'll compare it to like the current state of recruiting processes today. So old way of marketing, you have spray and pray messaging. Current recruiting, you have post and pray job postings. Old way of marketing, you're focused on lead quantity over lead quality. A lot of current recruiting processes are focused on how do we get a large candidate pool versus focusing on candidate quality. Old marketing, you're running demand capture campaigns, really just going after those who are in market. Current recruiting, you're only really starting conversations with those candidates actively seeking new roles who are applying to your positions from the Batch and Blast job advert that you were just talking about there. This one's my personal favorite. Old way of marketing, pricing is withheld until you talk to sales or go through all the different hoops. this is one that kills me right now in recruiting. The number of times that recruiters will withhold compensation or the company name that they are recruiting you for just eats away at me. It's like you're trying to get someone who's not really looking, who's top talent, and you're not telling them the most critical pieces of information around, like, will I be paid fairly? And is this a company I'd even want to work for? So those types of things, it's like we've seen what happens when you get ahead of it in marketing, and I'm watching recruiting just kind of like lag along, and I'm like, I've seen this before. I swear I've got this crystal ball in front of me. Like, I know how this can play out if we do it properly. So that's why I'm really excited, because we've changed the way that marketing is fundamentally done and have seen the drastic positive results that have come to businesses as a result. I'm like, we can do this with recruiting too. And that's what's so exciting to me here is, like, Lox is a great place that will help empower that. But just the environment of recruiting today, I think, is ripe and ready for this. And people want to be able to do it. They just don't necessarily know how or have the guidance to be able to do it fully yet.
Yeah. And the power of personal branding as well. I mean, like I touched on earlier, the sort of success that you and Chris and the rest of the Refine Labs team had at sort of owning that message really is super, super powerful. And if you think about recruitment agencies in terms of what you were talking about, the trusted leader, the thought leader, actually building a personal brand and investing in it makes your job a lot easier.
Oh, wildly easier. And that's why I think there's so much room for opportunity, because there's this interesting middle ground that I'm seeing right now where you do have some high level marketers who they're in a current job. They're never going to post, I'm open to work, but I know that they might be looking for new roles. I've talked to people in-house, agency, like everywhere across the gamut, but they also know that there's not a lot of current job security with some places. So they don't just want to go job hop, but they don't know where to go. So they're just blindly reaching out to a couple, maybe like two, three companies that they might want to work for. So how do you as an agency insert yourself into that conversation where it's like, hey, I've got a bunch of contacts that I know are also passively looking for these roles. They're not going to post it on a website. I mean, what company really says, like, hey, we're hiring for a CMO? Or that's usually one that they're bringing on a recruiter or an agency to help with, right? So how do you as an agency then position yourself to be the place where when people do start looking or wondering what options are out there, instead of them trying to figure out on their own, it's like, okay, I'm just going to go and talk to this agency, this person who can help me on that journey.
And I think a lot of people think that it's going to cost a lot of money. If I think about a brand and personal branding, all this sort of stuff, people then think, well, this is just going to cost me so much money. But it doesn't have to, does it? It really doesn't. You know, the power of these networks and things like a podcast or video stuff, it's simple. I mean, we have these amazing iPhones in our pockets. They can record at such great quality. And people want authenticity these days. They don't necessarily want this super slick corporate video anymore. They want to hear you and get a feel for you. So it's easier now than it ever has been, really, in terms of a time and a cost perspective.
Yeah. And you can't pay your way to that through, like, I'm going to spend $10,000 in ads to buy that trust. You do it by demonstrating your expertise and your understanding of what they're trying to do. So again, that costs you nothing. You just have to show what you've learned, how you can help, and that's going to get you a lot farther than $100,000, euros, pounds ever will any day.
Good stuff. Well, we definitely agree there's parallels there. When we were talking the other day at Loxo, you've been hired as their first marketer. Is that right?
First in-house marketer. Yeah.
Yeah. Great stuff. And you're responsible basically for scaling that team then. And how to scale a marketing team is quite a common question that we come across. But how are you thinking now that you're in the company, now that you've understood a little bit more about the space that you operate in, then how are you thinking of scaling your team now you're on board?
Yeah. So the biggest thing is unpacking marketing. As I said earlier, like, I've been through a lot of different functions in marketing. You have operations, you have outbound, you have events, you have demand, you have product. I mean, list goes on and on, because we marketers like to overcomplicate the simple things, right? So when I think about that and the fact that I'm at a startup essentially, or when you're the first marketer in an organization, what I found is that being a jack of all trades and eager to learn will go a lot farther than being able to go very deep in one area and only focusing on that. So an example of this, me personally, in the last 2 months, it's been a lot of heavy operations work to get processes in place, to make sure that the platforms are talking, we have the infrastructure and foundational items needed. As I said earlier, my last focus was demand gen. This has nothing to do with demand. If I only did demand, I would be dead in the water before I even got started. So I had been focusing on that. Heavy content and creative work. So I'll get to this a little bit later with you. But basically, our biggest problem is not enough people know about us. We have these phenomenal hour-long training videos, but who wants to watch an hour-long training video if you haven't heard of us before? So how do I chop those up and make them digestible quickly, put them into places where people want to consume them? So that's a creative side, content side of marketing, product marketing. So doing win-loss analysis, customer interviews, looking at our offer, digging into the roadmap. I've had to do all of that to understand, okay, where are we going? How do I want to position this? Then demand gen. So that's my bread and butter, but getting our message to the right people in a way that drives pipeline and revenue. So that's where I say, like, if I was only doing that last part, I would be amazed if Matt, our CEO, didn't say after 90 days, hey, it's been great with you, but you can find the door now. Like, you have to be able to support all this. And that's part of being first person or anything else. And so now, as I think about growth, one thing I do like about it is it gives me an appreciation for all of those things that have to occur in order to be doing it well. And so when I go to start to fill those roles, it gives me a much better sense of, like, what does the day-to-day really look like? What are the skills that are impactful for me? So instead of just going and copying a job description from any place else that's hiring it, I know what's relevant to my needs, the company's needs, and what we want to do to scale. Yeah, long-winded way of saying, like, if you want to be the first marketing hire, it's a lot of fun. You're going to learn a heck of a lot, but just be open to learning everything else. And also saying, you know, I don't know, but I'll figure it out. Like, that's probably the most critical aspect to it, is don't try to be an expert in everything. Be okay and say, you know, I'm an expert in this one part, but let's figure out the rest and go from there.
Yeah, who said a B2B tech marketer's job is easy? I mean, I'm surprised you don't have more gray hairs when you start talking about all the different bits that you're involved in there. But I think a lot of people have these sort of not necessarily preconceived ideas, but they think of, okay, well, I'm going to take a solo role, and then the first hire is going to be a product marketer. Then they're going to hire a demand gen person, and they're going to hire content. But it doesn't always work like that, does it? So you might get into your company and start rooting around and realize, do you know what, actually, maybe I did think a product marketer would come first, but actually it might be a content person or a demand gen person. Have you been through that thought process yourself as well?
I swear you're reading my mind right now. This was the exact thing that I thought when I got started, was I need a product marketer, because one, I'll be the first to admit, product marketing is not my background, not my expertise, and it's a very specific skill set that you want someone that knows it, lives and breathes it, and does it well. So I was like, hey, Matt, we're going to need to bring on a product market quickly, you know? We'll help validate our ICP, our offer, all of that. Fast forward a few months, Loxo has been around for 10 years, and I've quickly seen, after doing these initial win-loss analyses, understanding our offer, our ICP is dialed in, our message resonates with the market, and the offer itself is in line with marketing expectations. You know, they're saying, like, yep, that's a fair deal. I'm happy to come to conversations, buy from you all. Our biggest hurdle has been growth. So not enough people know about Loxo. If I could count the number of times that I've watched demos, been a part of demos, where someone says, how did we not know about you all sooner? That tells me that priority number one is not product marketing. It's getting in front of our ICP more. Like, they just don't know about us. We're not in the conversation. So to your point, and why I'm laughing, is I quickly shifted from we need a product marketer to I need a content marketer. I can handle the demand side. Like, as I said, that's my expertise. I'll gladly own that. But the content, like, I need someone who can help project manage our upcoming podcast, who can chop up these videos for me, can write helpful articles for social, for the website, can build out our customer and market newsletters, like all of those types of things that I could do okay. But there are phenomenal content marketers out there, and I'd be a fool not to leverage one of their skills and expertise. So yeah, to come in a roundabout way, like, we all have these preconceived motions of marketing hire number one is leader, marketing hire number two is product marketer, number three is demand. It's like, no, you really need to assess what's your current mix look like in terms of the skills that you have available, and also what's your company's maturity and, like, the biggest needs in terms of what needs to be filled if you want to be successful in hitting your business results.
Yeah, great advice. And the common answer is always, it depends, doesn't it? Sort of preface most answers. So what about where you are now then? I mean, it's a common role that we tend to find ourselves recruiting for. But from an output point of view, you talk about there, okay, one option is to hire a content marketer, but that might take a little while before you do hire somebody, they get on board, etc. Do you tend to work with the view that get an agency on board to start off with to sort of help with this sort of stuff? Or do you just sort of suck it up and kind of wait until you get that full-time hire?
Yeah. I didn't want to just say it depends after you just said it depends.
Well, it does depend. But
yeah, no, I think it depends on what are the gaps that you need to have filled. Is it product marketing? Is it content? Is it demand? And also where you're at as a company. So I'll touch on this from two points. I'll talk about it from the content lens, since you and I are on that. And then I'll talk about it from how I'm currently leveraging agencies. So don't let me forget, two-part question. I'm notorious for forgetting the second. All right, so content marketing side. I have experienced what happens when you outsource your content production, written and video, to make it easy. So written, you know, you go to an SEO, a place that can output like blog articles for you to rank for SEO. Does it check the box? Yeah, absolutely. You'll get your 5 articles every month for a certain fee that are going to rank for those keywords. But what I've found is when you go into those, they're very surface level. They're not super helpful because these people aren't experts in this space. So yeah, you'll rank for the keyword, but my big thing is always, it's not enough to show up, but like, are people reading and consuming the content? So I can get those clicks, but are they leaving after 3 seconds? Because it's fluff. It's not helpful. So it's really hard for me to outsource content from a written standpoint, from a video, or like thinking about podcasts. We're on a podcast right now. You can outsource things like the micro videos that come from it, because you can go through and watch this hour long video that you and I are having right here, and you can say, hey, chop up from 21-30 seconds to 23 minutes. I want one video there. And you can pick out those sections. Like, the skills that they have are the ability to make it look good, look polished, add the little touches that make it more appealing. But that's where it depends on what are the needs from that standpoint. On the demand side, so that's where I leverage Refine Lab still in my position here at Loxo. So do I have the skills to do it? Yeah. Do I have the time bandwidth? Is that the best use of my abilities? That's where I have found they're a phenomenal partner. It's actually the two guys that I used to manage are the people that are on the account. So I know their abilities. I know what they're capable of. And we have a phenomenal working flow because they're an extension of my team. So that's where it's different is, do you have an agency where you're one of 50 clients and they're doing all of your execution in 20 minutes a week, which I call BS on? Or is it an agency where you're one of 4 clients for them and they're spending hours per day in the platforms understanding, is this working? Are you getting what you need to? So that's where the trust and expertise side of it comes to. So
no, I think you're right. It depends. It's interesting. I hear you talk about Loxo. They're in quite an interesting spot, aren't they? Either an established business. You know, a lot of the people that we talk to are perhaps at very early stage startups. So it's not just their time constraint. They're also budget constraint too. So it's all good and well thinking about hiring an agency like Refine Labs, who are one of the best agencies out there, but they're not going to be able to afford it. Simple as that. So it kind of chops that option out, really. So, you know, you're in an interesting space where you are at Loxo.
And that, I think, ties into what I wanted to get into with this later on. What I found is, like, we don't need a product marketer because we have strong product market fit. I know the ICP. We're prepared to scale quickly. So scaling quickly means you will need to invest. And that's where agencies are great, where they're the gas, essentially, that you're just pouring in money to, and then they're going to help you scale. So if you don't have product market fit, you're unsure, you're going to be burning cash on an agency, especially one that's expensive. I have seen the returns with Refine, so I'm not concerned about that because I know that our acquisition numbers are more than offsetting our expenses from that. But no amount of ad spend can bring about product market fit. I've watched companies spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to try to get in front of the right people, but they're like, why aren't they converting? Why aren't they becoming customers? I'm like, well, it's too expensive. Let's go do a win-loss analysis. It's too expensive. It's not meeting the needs of what they want. You're not even targeting the right people. Like, these aren't the people that are buying or would best use it. So that's the other side of it that you need to balance, is where are you as a company and what you're trying to accomplish? And then, is it better suited in-house if you want to go slowly figure it out? If you're trying to figure out product market fit, I would not use an agency. If you are past the point where it's like, hey, we generated, let's make up a number, $25 million in revenue last year, we need to hit 50 this year. Well, that's a heck of a growth goal. You're going to probably need help if you're a team of one to accomplish that. But you've got the groundwork laid and everything else. You just need to scale.
Yeah. And you touched on it earlier about the sort of not launching too early into the demand gen side. We find a lot of early stage startups, they think, hang on a minute, we need pipeline. Let's hire a demand gen person. But it's totally not the right time. It's like you said, just going back to understanding the ICP, your positioning, your messaging and all that kind of stuff. And once that's then dialed in, it's then time to hire a demand gen person. What about sort of prioritization? We hear a lot about so many ideas, so little time. I mean, you know, you've been obviously pretty busy since you've landed at Loxo. You're probably shooting off ideas left, right and center, but there's only so much you can do, isn't there? So how do you work through what to do first, and then what to do next, and then after that?
Yeah, you don't want to see this notebook in front of me or the Asana board that I manage my day-to-day with. They are my saviors, but at the same time, there's a lot going on, like you said. So prioritization is something that I probably really hammered out well for myself during my time at Refine Labs. There's a lot going on. And that's why I loved working in an agency, is you have to balance a number of things at once. So how do you prioritize this over that, or when to do things? So first, figure out a system that worked for me. And that's like the notebook Asana, just to keep me on track of things. And then from there, it's okay, how do you prioritize? Like, what do you want to accomplish first, second, third, and all of that? So one thing I do love about our CEO, Matt, is that he's a huge proponent of bringing in people who do things well that the company needs help with, and then they lead on that front. So when I came in, I had an outline. What do I want to accomplish in the first 90 days? What do I want to accomplish in the first year together? First 90 days have a lot of fundamental foundational items that I know need to be in place in order to scale properly. So like we just said a minute ago, it's, do you have the platform set up well? Before you can even scale on paid search, do you have the ability to see when people did paid search? I love it because it's direct response. You can see the exact keyword that they plugged in to come and say, hey, I want a demo, or I want to get started on your free trial. Is that data even passing over to Salesforce, your CRM, your marketing automation tool? So you know, what are the keywords that we should even be spending on? If you don't have that, then you can't scale demand gen if you're just blindly throwing money into things. So that's where the first 90 days prioritization, where before I throw money at anything else, I need to figure out what's working and all of that. So a lot of the core priorities that I was thinking about were evaluations, just current state of the land. What are we seeing in terms of like our acquisition strategy and performance? What's our branding plan? What's our content production or lack of production look like? What does our product roadmap look like? So I can start to think about how things should fit in as we move forward. Is our messaging landing? Is our ICP dialed in? Are the people that we've been targeting the people that are even signing the deals or starting those conversations with sales? So those all led me to do things like the win-loss analyses, understanding how we are or aren't communicating, where our ICP is. What's our brand voice? How are we positioned in the market? What are the overall business trends and industry trends? So this is all unsexy work. It's not pretty. It's not fun, especially for demand gen marketer that's like, hey, let's just grow. Let's scale. Let's do everything we can. None of those are that part of it, but it's all what builds that foundation that you need to do it well. So what that meant I needed to do in terms of prioritization was getting our Salesforce processes in place, especially reporting and understanding, like, where are we growing? Do we have the data to understand what segments, what keywords, like you name it? Like, when I think about our business goals, if I can't figure out how marketing is tied into that, as I say, Matt will show me that door in 90 days. I wouldn't blame him for that. So you've got things like that. And then I need to build out the content engine. So if I want to do demand gen, well, it's not enough to just target people. You have to have something that resonates, that matters, that provides value, that educates or entertains. So do we have the content to support that? Right now, not too much. So that's why I'm working on, like, okay, well, let's get a podcast going, not to get a million downloads per month. That'd be great. You know, there's a lot of recruiting podcasts out there, but I want to use this as my content pillar. So take these long form episodes and then be able to turn it into infographics, blog posts, video, short form, long form, you know, all these things that can be used by sales, customer success, marketing, a number of different ways. So that's what I would need to do to scale the demand gen well. Need to make sure that the website messaging, is it clear? Is it configured to drive the behaviors that we want when people do come to our website? So it's like, it's not this drop off where it's like, oh, I thought you were doing this, but your website seems really different, or it's not for me. Bye. Like, you know, you have to make sure that that alignment's there. And then lastly, and I think this one's most critical, especially as the first marketing hire, is developing strong relationships with sales, customer success, product, and then just leadership as a whole. So are they bought in? Are they aligned? And this might be one of my favorite things that I love about Loxo here is I have a shared acquisition goal with sales. I have a shared expansion goal with customer success. Both those are in terms of revenue. So we aren't fighting over attribution. You know, they came in from marketing touchpoint or sales touchpoint. Like, we know that it's not one touchpoint that does it. It's the aggregation of phenomenal touchpoints with, like, they had a great chat with a customer support rep in our chat bot that pops up, or, you know, like a very timely customer story came up when it was around renewal time. So there's different things that insert, and no one is more important than the other, should be given credit. I mean, that's going to lead to sales leader and I bashing heads, customer success being like, no, we've got this, don't want you touching customers. So having that alignment, I think, is absolutely critical and why those relationships are so important to get set up in the first 90 days.
Oh, good stuff. And do you generally think about how the company goes to market as well? So if I think about recruitment, it's a traditional market, but I'd say a lot of the incumbent suppliers in that market are also quite traditional how they go to market, i.e. if you're interested, I'm going to set you up with a call with a salesperson, and I might give you a little bit of a demo here. And, you know, it's very, very, a little bit like buying enterprise software. Whereas what buyers want, as you know these days, is to, one, see the pricing, jump in and see the product. Wow, this is amazing. Bang. I can buy it. You know, it's that sort of product-led growth, I guess. Is that working through your head, or are you kind of just parking that for now and thinking, okay, let's just get all the fundamental stuff set up before we start thinking about that bigger stuff?
Yeah, so that's something that the team was thinking about before I even joined, and I'm so glad that they did, because like you said, most of it sales-led. You have to talk to sales, then they'll give you a demo. It's really high level. It's not going to necessarily get into the specifics that you need, and then you might end up with an ATS or CRM that's not really suited to the type of recruitment that you do, or you're going to have to really figure out your integrations, I say lightly, in terms of like how it's going to work with your other tech. So yeah, the two big things are, one, they've been working on a product-led strategy before I even started, and then we recently pushed that out just about a month ago, 28 days ago to be exact, because that day is forever burned in my head when we said that we're going to give an ATS and CRM away for free forever. You can always have it. So we really pushed on that, and that's never before been done in the recruitment tech space. There's free trials here and there, but a true product-led offer has not existed. So combine that with, like you and I said, like pricing. I was like, guys, we have a pricing page, but it doesn't give pricing. That's not a pricing page. That's going to be someone throwing their laptop at the wall and saying, I will never buy from you. You just pulled one over on me. So work with the team to get a true pricing page in place so people know exactly what will they get at different service levels. And then we just built out this really cool addition to the page. It's a graphic that basically compares a normal recruiter's tech stack. So you have your ATS, your CRM, your sourcing tool, your tool to get contact information, your reporting tool. And when you look at them all individually, it's like, oh, it's not bad. It's a couple hundred bucks a month per recruiter. This one's $1,000. But when you add it up, we found that on average, it's like $50,000, $60,000 per recruiter per year, which is crazy. And they aren't really properly integrated. You're lucky if you sync some information from them, but from a cost standpoint and a time standpoint of like trying to get the information over, it's a lot of work. You end up managing your tech stack more than you are recruiting, which that's a conversation in itself. Yeah. So I said like, hey, here's all the cost of that. Compare it to what you get in Loxa, which is basically like everything. Yeah, we're not one-stop shop. I'll be the first to say you're probably still going to want LinkedIn Recruiter Lite and some of the other tools to make it easy. But when you compare $50,000 to our core offer is $6,600 per year per recruiter, and then you add on a couple other things, it's like a 90% cost reduction, and you have everything in one place. Time efficiencies are there and everything else. I'm like, why aren't we showing this more? Why are we hiding this behind a sales conversation that we get to on the third call? Like, let people see this, and they'll say like, oh my God, that exists. That is insane. So people want to find that on their own. That's how we said research has really shifted. The buyers want to uncover this before they start the conversation. So let them research and find this on their own without withholding it from them.
Yeah, and there's those diagrams you see on some websites, the old way and the new way. It's sort of describing, I can't remember, there is a term around the messaging and the positioning around this sort of stuff, but it's probably more around sort of creating new categories. But I guess you're kind of pivoting in an existing category and saying, actually, it's slightly different. Yeah, interesting stuff, really interesting stuff. Flipping things a little bit, you've been looking for a job recently, probably talking to a few different founders of B2B tech companies, but what advice would you perhaps give a founder or CEO of a tech startup looking to hire marketers then to help them attract the right sorts of people and get them engaged?
First thing is, I would say, do not expect marketing to be a light switch where demand comes pouring in as soon as you do marketing, as soon as you hire that person, whatever else. So no matter what marketer type you get, product marketer, demand marketer, whatever, like I've just seen too many people think of it as just a very like transactional investment, which is not the case, especially as you get more into enterprise or B2B purchases where it's not like, oh yeah, I guess I will buy that Snicker bar for a dollar. It's not an impulse buy with anything like that. And I'm sure you've seen time and again, especially with recruitment tech, the costs aren't enough to move people. It's the change management that most are like, I don't want to overhaul my ATS. I don't want to do a migration or anything else. So that's the big thing, is you're not just overcoming a couple little things. There's a lot that needs to go into this. So the way that I was thinking about it as a marketer, when I'm assessing, like, is this company a fit? Is it somewhere that I'd want to pursue? Is The philosophy that I follow, demand gen, kind of what you said, Refine Labs is where I came from. It's not what most companies follow. I'll say yet more adopting it, which is great. I love it. So the number one thing to me is working with a CEO and a company that believes in that philosophy. I've seen what happens when you try to straddle a line and, well, we still need to do our ebook downloads or like just the transactional view. And it's tough, but you really do have to go all in on it for it to work and trust that it's going to take a little bit of time, but it'll come back around. So I needed to know that I had a team in my corner that was just like, hey, we trust you, seen you do it, and we want to help you do this as well. So that was the biggest thing to me. Second is, I think it's a little bit more unique just to my experience and what I'd seen, but it was, I wanted to be an organization that was bootstrapped or customer funded is the easiest way to describe it. So after working at Refine, we worked with a number of companies that were VC backed. Phenomenal when it's like, hey, we've got money to burn, let's go nuts, let's scale. But when the economic concerns started to enter the picture, it's amazing what happens to that funding as soon as that comes in. So funding's pulled back. And the number of times that I heard the logic of, our board said that we need to go back to the old way. What works? What's tried and true? When they're just starting to make progress, I'm like, I do not want those handcuffs on me. I'm not going to deal with it. So that was a personal choice for me, where having a company that believes in that and then being on our own timeline, which is what happens when you're bootstrapped, is you dictate your growth and everything else versus being the golden handcuffs of VC. So I didn't want to have to deal with that, to be completely honest. So it was a little bit selfish on my part, but it was what I knew I wanted in order to be successful long term. Third thing was understanding my strengths and weaknesses. Like, how can that be utilized at a company? So I've said this time and again, I love demand gen, scaling companies. So where is that skill set most or best applied? Need to be at a place where they have product market fit and they're ready to scale. So what we spoke about earlier, they're at that stage. Demand gen isn't going to do well when you want to figure out what is product market fit. So that's where, if you're more of a product marketer, you might enjoy an earlier stage company where you have to figure out, who is our ICP? What is the messaging that works best? How do we craft the offer that goes into that? So those are probably some of the biggest things where, now flipping it back to your question of, if you're a CEO trying to attract people, is I think you'll want to be very open and honest with them, because those were things that I think Matt did incredibly well on, is I asked him direct questions and we weren't dancing to try to figure out if we were going to make it work, but he's looking for something specific. I'm looking for something specific. So let's figure out, like, will this work and how will it go from there? So those were probably the main things that I would say. And then to simplify it, like, if you aren't even sure, if you're just kind of like actively or passively looking, or you're just not enjoying your current role, the best advice I was ever given was you should compare three things. One is, when you look at your current company that you're working for, do you believe in the product or service? Does it interest you? Second thing, do you have a great team? Do you thrive in that environment? Do you enjoy the people that you work with? And the third thing is, are you compensated well? So then when you start looking at other opportunities, if you only check one of those boxes or none, it's like, well, probably going to have a lot of upside anywhere else you go. But when you start to get to one, to two, to three, it's like, now you're starting to gamble. If you've got a great team, you love what you do, you're compensated well, why are you looking? I think you should start to explore, what is it that's going on that's prompting that? And then say you want to be paid a little bit more. Have an internal conversation, especially with marketers and companies right now. People are saying, like, I would rather invest $10,000 more in you a year versus what I know the cost is to bring in a new hire, to train them, to onboard them, to get them up to speed. Like, it's not worth it. So that's where I would just say, come back to that and then be willing to have that conversation with your team.
Yeah, it's really good advice. And how deep would you, when you're interviewing with a company, go on the financials then? Would you dig into that much?
So this is something I've recently completely changed my mind about. And I was even talking to someone yesterday about this first call. Salary transparency is becoming more important, but I'm a big believer in it for the exact reasons I was talking about earlier, is I don't want to do the dance and spend 3 hours talking to you only at the end to find out that you're expecting $500,000 and I can only pay you 50. Like, that's such a fundamental, clear-cut, like, way to rule someone in or out, where you just say, like, are we even in the same ballpark with each other? It's like, you expect 150, I had budgeted 130. We can probably make this work, or we can figure something out. Mm-hmm. But to me, I'm painfully logical. So I would rather hash out those details first and then say, cool, like, okay, yeah, we're on the same space. Now let's see, like, I kind of know or have a sense of your skill set and things I've learned about you, but let's now put you through the motions of the interview, have you go through the process, and then see, like, are you a strong fit for it from there? So curious, like, what are you seeing from your side in terms of that with people you're talking to?
I would always talk about salary up front. Yeah, absolutely. And encourage it as well. You know, we put salaries on all our adverts, so you won't see an advert that doesn't have a salary. I know in some areas it's actually can be a bit tricky for companies to do that, but I think, I wouldn't know what the stats are, but if we didn't put a salary on a job advert, I think we'd see less applications overall. But especially with the economic situation that we live in, salary is a key driver for a lot of people. It's XX and salary. You know, people are looking to be paid more because, you know, the cost of living crisis that's going on. So I would always get it up front. Would you go further than that and also then talk about a company's financials, i.e. talk to me about what your numbers are, what's your burn rate? Would you do that or would you not?
It depends on the company, if you're public, if you're private, the stage maturity that you're in. And also, you and I can toss those words around, but until 2 years ago, I didn't know or care what a burn rate was. Like, I wasn't at that point in my career where that was going to make a huge impact to me. So is that something that's important to that person's job if they're joining as a specialist? Like, do they need to know the burn rate and the company financials? Like, it's great for learning and everything else, but maybe later on, if you are going after VP, C-level people, it is important. And that was something that I absolutely asked Matt when we were getting later on, but that was a much later question for me because I also wanted to be respectful of their company, and some will make you sign an NDA for it and others. But say I were to be exploring two recruitment tech companies at the same time, and then I was able to hop over to you and be like, oh, hey, their burn rate's this. I know that we can one up them or something. Not, I didn't do anything like that, but that's the other side of it where I don't call it ethics, but I would personally probably wait a little bit later on unless I knew it was a make or break early on for the person. And then I'd probably put them into a data privacy thing just to make sure that they were keeping that between us.
Okay, good stuff. Sound advice. Right, final question then. This is kind of going back to your roots, really. What skills and attributes do you think make someone good at demand gen?
First one I'm going to say is curiosity, just because that's something that I've always loved is, are you just always interested in wanting to figure out new ways, better ways, different ways, especially just seeing, I mean, a year, maybe 2 years ago, COVID years all blend together, but like, despite everything going on with TikTok, if you aren't curious about like, why is 50% of the US population on that platform now? And is that even something that we've thought about? You don't have to be on there just quite yet, but like, you have to be open to understanding that the market is going to change, where people spend their time and energy is going to change, and you have to be willing to adapt to that. So I love LinkedIn. Is it going to be around forever? Probably not. What's going to happen when that does? I'm going to have to figure out how to get my message over to people in places where they spend their time. So curiosity is a big part of that. And also just like being different, challenging the status quo. There's a lot of recruitment tech out there. I have this running joke where I say B2B SaaS probably has a blue background, probably has copy around an ROI stat, and is probably all sound the exact same. So I'm like, is best practice really good? It's an average, right? Like,
It's safe.
But yeah, I mean, if you want to grow, but you're trying to look and sound like the other 10 people in the space, are you doing yourself a service or a disservice? So I've always been a fan of, let's not sound like 95% of our competition, and let's make it so our message does stand out a little bit more when people do come across us or do things a little bit different. So that's my personal take on it, is I've always pushed that, and that's been a big part of like Find Labs. I don't have to explain to you, they embrace that more than openly. And that's a big thing that what I love about Matt here is he's just like, I trust you. Obviously, I know you're not going to do anything that will jeopardize our company or disrespectful or anything else, but like, have fun, experiment, figure that stuff out so we can stand out in this very crowded space. And then that brings me to the final thing that I think is really helpful for demand gen marketer is like, can you move fast and iterate? So when you do that thing that's different, did it work? Cool. Let's push it. Let's double down on it before other people can jump in. What did you learn from it? Let's apply that moving forward. So I see a lot of places run an experiment or run a campaign, and then here's the results. Here's how it went. And they just go put it in a box, put it in their content, their storage spot, and then leave it. I'm like, well, how'd you apply those learnings? What did you come away with from that? Why wouldn't you take the things that worked well and apply that to your next thing, even if it's a little bit different, if it's the way that you use the tone of your messaging, if it's the colors, if it's the medium or whatever else that is, like apply that to the next round. And the things that didn't work well, make a note of that. Like, we don't need to use red backgrounds again. It does not do well. I mean, you can come up with those different types of things, but this is something that I think is why startups are so interesting to me and why I like them so much, is they adapt to this like move fast, iterate mentality so much more than the enterprise, where it's like, we've got to run it up the chain of command, get approval. By the time that that's done, it's like, oh yeah, we'll get creative, but we're in a backlog, so it's going to be a quarter. So that idea that was irrelevant in January that you're finally getting out in July, it's like people aren't even talking about that anymore. And you're just seen as this old dated reptile.
Yeah, it's a fascinating space. I mean, you know, companies are much more marketing led these days. I mean, I've been in this space for nearly 20 years. And, you know, going back years and years, marketing was very much seen as the colouring in department. It was sort of putting an event here, produce a bit of collateral there. But really now they are driving the growth within a lot of companies, which makes it super exciting and super fascinating, really. Sam, it's been fantastic to have you on. I've been secretly stalking you on LinkedIn for a while now. So to finally get you on the podcast is great. And you have not disappointed. So I've had a fantastic chat with you today. Thank you very much for sharing your knowledge.
Good. Yeah, this was fun. I'm glad that we could have a different conversation than the normal B2B stuff. So no, this was a lot of fun. We'll have to have a part two sometime and see how my crystal ball is doing.
Yeah, we didn't have the MQL is dead debate, did we?
Oh, yeah.
Let's leave that one.
Please.
So that's it for another episode of the Market Mentors podcast. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, then please leave a review, as that helps the channel going forward. Until next time.